Part 2 of 3, A Journey Through the Steps with Carver B. from Hattiesburg, Mississippi, at the Birmingham, Alabama Grace Fellowship of SAA Fall Retreat, October 11, 2014.
Here. All right. So we've done something really remarkable. In about an hour, we took the first three steps. We are on this path now. A total transformation. I'm so excited. So now we're at the point where, according to the steps, we're at the fourth step. It's time to do an inventory. When should we do an inventory? When do you think we ought to do that? If you turn to page 63 of the big book and you look two lines down from the bottom, what's the first word? Next, meaning now. So when I did the third step prayer with my sponsor, he looked at me and he says, okay, good job. Now you're going to do an inventory. The directions are in the book. You're going to start working on the inventory. We're going to talk every day and it's going to be great. So Tal's going to take us through, starting two lines down from the bottom of page 63. Tell us about the fourth step, Tal.
Next, we launched out on a course of vigorous action, the first step of which is a personal house cleaning, next page, which many of us had never attempted. Though our decision was a vital and crucial step, it could have little permanent effect unless at once followed by a strenuous effort to face and be rid of the things in ourselves which had been blocking us. Our liquor was but a symptom. So we had to get down to causes and conditions. Therefore, we started upon a personal inventory. This was step 4. A business which takes no regular inventory usually goes broke. Taking a commercial inventory is a fact-finding and a fact-facing process. It is an effort to discover the truth about the stock in trade. One object is to disclose damaged or unsellable goods, to get rid of them promptly and without regret.
Okay, skip to the next paragraph. What does it say?
We did exactly the same thing with our lives. We took stock honestly. First, we searched out the flaws in our makeup which caused our failure. Being convinced that self manifested in various ways was what had defeated us. We considered its common manifestations.
Okay, so let's pause right there and hold that spot. And now we're going to look toward our inventory. The inventory that I've got for us today to do is courtesy of Wally's book, Back to Basics. This is the inventory that's printed in there. And I want to tell you a couple of things. You know, first of all, I'm not trying to tell anybody that there's one and only one way to do an inventory. Oh my gosh, there's thousands of ways to do an inventory. You Google personal inventories, you'll come up with a couple of thousand of them, I'm here to tell you. This is just one that has some archival significance, and it's one that's easy to do in a setting like this, and it literally gets down to the core of what's wrong with us. It's a powerful tool. Now, one thing you might notice about this inventory is you realize that it was originally published in April of 1939. That means that it is old. Yeah, it's old. That happens to be, it's actually the same year that the big book was published. It was published again in AA's Grapevine magazine in 1946. So it's been around a long, long time and has been published and republished. Ironically, this is the same inventory that Dr. Bob used to take 5,000 men and women through the steps in the 1940s. In the AA archives, Dr. Bob took 5,000 men and women through the steps, and we know that he only lived for 15 years after he got sober before he died of emphysema. And if you do the math, oh my gosh, what is that? That's like taking two people through the steps every 3 days or something without taking Christmas off. How do you do that? How does somebody do that? Well, Dr. Bob worked at a hospital, and he would take people through the steps while they were detoxing in the hospital, little groups of two and three. So he would take them through the steps, and Dr. Bob would write their inventory for them, by and large, because they couldn't hang on to a pen. They were detoxing. They would tell the stories. Dr. Bob would write out their inventory. Detox in the 1940s lasted approximately 3 days. And so Bob was taking people through the steps, not in 3 months, not in 3 years, in 3 days while they were in the hospital, and they would hit the ground when they were discharged and go out and start doing their amends. And they had their inventories with them. This program was designed to be done quickly and often. You got it. You got it. All right. So when you look at the inventory, you'll notice that on one side you've got a list of character liabilities. This is the bad stuff, right? Over on the other side, you'll notice that it has a list of character assets. This is the
good stuff.
Exactly. Everybody in here has some of the good and some bad stuff, right? But I don't know if you're like me. I sure had a hard time when I did my first inventory seeing any of the good. I could give you dossiers on all the bad stuff I had done, but I'd have been hard-pressed to point out any of the good. One of the beautiful parts of the inventory is it's going to point out both to us, and we're going to know exactly what we need to surrender. Y'all ready? Mm-hmm. The first thing, if you notice from the reading, was it tells us that we're going to look at the liabilities first. So here's what I would ask you to do. I would ask you to take the inventory and just fold the assets back. Just fold the assets back so that we can first concentrate on the liabilities, and then we'll be able to look at the assets in just a little bit. Okay? So we've got those folded back. Your inventory looks something like this. And then we go back to the big book on page 64 to let the big book, the authors of the big book, tell us what do we need to write first. So this is the last paragraph, page 64. Tal, what does it say?
Resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics or addicts than anything else. From it stem all forms of spiritual disease.
Now jump down four lines and start highlighting where it says in dealing.
In dealing with resentments, we set them on paper. We listed people, institutions, or principles with whom we were angry.
Okay, pause right there. So that's what we're going to do. So take in your inventory and get your pen. And what I want you to do is, you see this angled lines at the top? All right, the question is, who or what are you angry at? Write down the first one on this angled line. Write the second one on the second angled line. Write the third one on the third angled line. Does anybody need a pen or an inventory? Raise your hand. And my buddy Phil is going to help us out. So the question is, who or what are you angry at? Write the first one on the first angle line, the next one on the next angle line. Write down the first two or three or four or 50 things that come to your mind when I say, who or what are you angry at? Has everybody got something down? If you need more time, raise your hand. So you might notice that resentment is the first row. And we've just done a resentment inventory. So what I would ask you is, put a dot underneath each one of these things you just wrote down on the resentment row. Put a dot in the box underneath each one of these things you just wrote down on the resentment row. Sound good? Okay. Want to know what to write next? Turn to page 68. Page 68, the first full paragraph. We're getting ready to do a fears inventory. It starts with, we reviewed. Tal's going to help us out.
We reviewed our fears thoroughly. We put them on paper, even though we had no resentments in connection with them. We asked ourselves why we had them. Wasn't it because self-reliance failed us? Self-reliance was good as far as it went, but it didn't go far enough.
Okay. So what we're going to do now is a fears inventory. So on the next available blank line, right where you left off, the question is, I want you to write down something new, something that you haven't written down already, and I want you to write down something you're afraid of. What are you afraid of? Write down something new, something that's already on there, and write down the first two or three or four or five things that come to your mind. Yeah, write on the very next blank angled line. What's something you're afraid of? Write down the first two or three or four whatever things that come to your mind. What are you afraid of? If you need another minute, raise your hand if you need more time, okay? You guys are actually doing an inventory. I'm very proud of you. This is fantastic. Did you guys notice that fear is the second of the liabilities? So underneath these new things you just put down, I want you to put a dot in the box on the second row, the fear row. Put a dot underneath each one of these things you just wrote down on the fear row. And then I want you to look back at your resentments, because sometimes we've got fear associated with our resentments too. I could be resentful at something, but I might also have some fear. So look over your resentments that you wrote down first. See if you've got any fear associated with it. And if you do, put a fear dot. See, some things will take two dots. Make sense? Yes. Yeah.
Now, where am I putting these dots?
Right. The first dots go on the resentment line. Okay. So those first things that I was angry at, I put a dot underneath those on that first row. And then when I added my fear here, then I put a dot on the second row. And then I looked back at my inventories of the resentments, and I realized, you know, this one that I had a resentment against, I've also got some fear. So I put a dot there too. Yeah. That's a good question. No, I'm glad you did that. I sometimes can go too fast. I'm from Mississippi. We'll just run right by you. Okay. Does anybody need more time? Are we okay right now? Hold up your hand if you need more time. Excellent. Okay. So now we're going to do a harms inventory. That's on page 69. It's the first full paragraph, the one right in the middle of the page. Tal's going to help us out with it.
We reviewed our own conduct over the years past. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, or inconsiderate? Whom had we hurt? Did we unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? Where were we at fault? What should we have done instead? We got all this down on paper and looked at it.
All right. Okay. So that's what we're going to do. So on the very next available blank line, right where you left off, the question is, who have you hurt? I want you to write down somebody new, somebody that's not already on your inventory. We'll go back and look at those that are already there. But when I say, who have you hurt, whatever names bubble up as I say that, write them on the next available angle lines. Write down the first two, three, four, or five names, whatever comes to your mind when I say, who have you hurt? If anybody needs additional pages, raise your hand and I'll get extra pages to you as well. Yes, Beth? Yeah, not one that's already on there. We're going to go back and we're going to look at what's already on there. These are going to be any new names that bubble up. Why not? They're free. You're welcome. Okay, so have you got some names written down? When you get a name or two or three or 12 down, then the next part is you want to think about how you hurt them. And so put a dot that represents how did I hurt them. Did you hurt them with your selfishness? Then put a selfishness dot. Did you hurt them because you were dishonest? You were dishonest with them? Put a dishonesty dot. Did you hurt them with your false pride? Did you judge them not as good as you or better than you? Put a false pride dot. Were you jealous? Put a jealousy dot. Were you lazy? Didn't do something you should have done because you were lazy? Put a lazy dot. Put a dot or two or three dots that best represents how you hurt them. When you get to a stopping place, you want to look back over your resentments. Sometimes we've hurt those that we have a resentment against. And so, looking back over your resentments, ask yourself the question, have I hurt any of the people that I first listed as resentments? Have I been selfish with them? Then put a selfishness thought there. Have I been dishonest with any of the people that I have a resentment against? If so, put a dishonesty dot. Put a dot that represents if any way you might have hurt any of the people that you have a resentment against. And if anybody has any questions or needs some assistance, you just raise your hand and I'll come to you. Or just answer your question out, ask your question out loud, either way. Yes. Uh-huh. That is a great question. They're very similar, aren't they? Jealousy is about people. Envy is about things. So I would be jealous of you as a person, but I would be envious of your BMW from the future. Have you seen BMWs from the future? They're something. Oh my gosh, they'll do everything. They have French presses in them, I think. That's a good question. Does everybody understand false pride? Do y'all know the recovery triangle that's on the AA coins? You know, now it represents the three legacies, but in the beginning, the triangle was the symbol of recovery. That's a notion that was introduced by Dr. Bob's wife, Ann Smith. She's one of the heroes of recovery, and yet wasn't an addict. But she came up with this notion that the triangle represented the symbol of recovery. And here's how it goes. The triangle is here, a higher power is at the top, and then we are at the one corner, and other people are at the other corner. So all the energy is above. The triangle lays flat, so that we are on an exact flat plane with other people. But any time that the angle that the triangle tilts so that I'm looking down at somebody, that's false pride. Sarcasm, prejudice are examples of that type of false pride. At the same time, if the triangle tilts the other way and I'm putting somebody on a pedestal thinking I'm not as good as somebody, that's false pride too. So self-pity would be an example of this type of false pride. So it works either way. Does that help? Yes.
Good question. I could share a little example. I put my dad down on the list, and I'm looking at dishonesty. And I've cleaned that up, I think, pretty well for these past few years since I've been in recovery, but I certainly put a dot for 10 years ago. How do we blend some of the past and the present?
This is a great question. How do we blend some of the energy from the past? How do I know if something is resolved or not? Because if I've gone through the process of recovery already and I've made amends and I've gotten to the forgiveness piece, then is it something that I need to continue to keep inventorying? And the way my sponsor told me is, he says, you know, if it's bothering me today, then it's something to put down. If it's something, some energy in there that is still troublesome to me, then there may be another level of forgiveness, another level of healing. So I could inventory it. But if it's something that's been done in the past and I've made amends or my best attempt and I've resolved the issue, then there's no need to re-inventory things that I've carried through the entire step process. Does this make sense? Yeah. So if I've gone through a resolution and I'm at peace, then there's no need to re-inventory something along those lines. If it's bothering me today, then it's something to put down, even though it may have been something that occurred decades before. Anybody need more time with this? Raise your hand. Yes. Well, you know, I mean, if you've got something, if there's any other energy, if harm has been occurred with anything that you've had a fear against, let's say you had a fear of a person, it would be good to evaluate to see if you've actually harmed that person as well, to see if there's any other dots that would go in. And you bring up a really great point. You'll notice that there are additional lines underneath the liabilities. You know, some of us may say, well, you know, this may be not a comprehensive list of character liabilities for me. And that would be absolutely okay. I've had some that have needed to add additional liabilities, which is absolutely okay as long as you put the opposite characteristic, the positive characteristic, over on the other side. Does this seem reasonable? So this isn't, you know, absolutely complete, but it is something to help us get some traction on how to do an inventory. Keep in mind, this is not the last inventory you'll ever do. Yeah, we take the steps quickly and right. So we're going to revisit this time and again. In many cases, it's believed that to do a simple spot check inventory like this is a good one to get us started, and then later we can go into more detail with a columned inventory. But then down the pike, this is a very good inventory, just to spot check. Where am I now? You're going to see how revealing this is in just a moment. These are good questions. Okay, so now you've got dots, you've looked over your resentments, you've kind of filled in a matrix, as it were. So the next part of the process is, I want you to go through and I want you to add up the number of resentment dots and write the number next to the word resentment. Add up the number of fear dots and write the number next to the word fear. Go down the list and add up the number of each one of the liabilities and put the number next to the word. If you don't have any of something, put a zero. So that when you're finished, you should have 8 numbers written down top to bottom. Excellent. Okay. And now we go back to the big book to find out what we do next. So find page 69, find the last full paragraph on page 69, and the second sentence where it begins, "We must be willing." Yep, page 69, last full paragraph, second sentence where it says, "We must be willing." Tao, what does it say, buddy?
"We must be willing to make amends where we have done harm, provided that we do not bring about still more harm in so doing."
Okay, so let's pause right there and look at your inventory again. And I want you to examine the whole thing. And I want to offer up a suggestion. So let's just say that what if, by some miracle, that the people on your inventory were to magically show up here later today? I feel the tension. I'm out of here, right? I'm with you. You and me. I'm right with you. Yeah. So if any of the people were to magically show up here later today, is there any of the dots on your inventory that you would be willing to go to that person and you'd be willing to say to him, "You know, I was wrong and I'm sorry and I want to make it right"? If there's any of the dots on your inventory that you'd be willing to tell them you were wrong, you were sorry, you want to make it right, then turn those dots into check marks right now. Look over your whole inventory. Of course, not everything on there do you owe an amend. Not everything on there are you going to be willing to make amends. And this doesn't mean that we're going to be rushing out to do it. I'm just saying, you'd be willing to do it if you bumped into them tonight. Looking over your whole inventory, you just see if there's not one or two or several things on there that you'd be willing to make an amends. Then turn those dots into check marks. Yes? Well, that's a good one. You know, so you've got something down that's still bothering you. You've already made the amends. I would say, though, even though you may have made the amends, but you'd be willing to do it, I'd go ahead and turn it into a check mark, because it doesn't mean that we're going to go, that's one we're going to do. We honestly, just because we're willing to do one, doesn't mean that it's appropriate that we're going to go make the amends, right? we don't know whether it's appropriate until we sit down and talk it over with a sponsor or a sharing partner or somebody in the program that understands the inventory restitution process. So we got more work to do before. This is just simply an admission that if it was appropriate to do it, I'd be willing to do it. Make sense? No, not necessarily, because you may have some on there that you go, you know, this one, I'm willing to make an amends for the dishonesty, but I'm not willing to make amends for the resentment. And you may have a resentment, and it may not be appropriate to make an amends. Let me give you an example. So I think I mentioned to you, I grew up in an addicted home. Dad was an alcoholic. Mom was an alcoholic and a drug addict. And so I grew up in this home, and so when I did my very first, in fact, many of my early inventories, the first thing on my list was my dad. Had a resentment in growing up in this controlling alcoholic home. But then I had been dishonest with him about what I had been doing too. And then I had looked down on him because he was an alcoholic, but I had put him up on a pedestal because he was a remarkably successful businessman. I didn't think I'd ever be as successful as him. And so I had false pride. So when I go to do my inventory, I inventory the resentment, the false pride, the dishonesty, but I didn't feel like, did I owe an amend for being a kid growing up in an alcoholic home? So I didn't feel like that there was an amend to be made for what the circumstance. So I didn't put a check mark on that one. But for the dishonesty, yeah, I was willing. And for the false pride, I was willing. So some things could have a check mark and some maybe not. That's a great question. Any other questions or observations? Yeah.
If it's something like jealousy or envy or false pride, the person you put down doesn't even know that you felt those things, you're not going to necessarily go to that person and say, I'm sorry, I've hurt you, and they don't even know.
Well, this is true, but we're not even at that point yet. All we are at the point of is, am I willing? See, we don't know whether it's appropriate to make an amend yet. So the question here with the check mark is, are you willing? I mean, if you were to discuss this with a sponsor and a sponsor were to say to you, yes, absolutely, it's appropriate to make amends, would you be willing? So at this point, all you're evaluating is your willingness on each one of these and not that you're going to necessarily go do it. As I said earlier, this doesn't mean we're running out to do the amends. This just means that I'd be willing to do it if it was called for. Does it seem reasonable? We can have a tendency, and I do too, to overthink. My sponsor told me at this point, he said, thinking is bad. Writing is good. Did you notice in the book, there's no chapter into thinking? I've looked. Okay, so everybody's got some check marks down. You've got some numbers. And now it's time to get down to causes and conditions, right? That's the purpose of the inventory, right? To find out our liabilities and our assets. Open up the asset side of your inventory. Look over the whole inventory. And I want you to notice how you guys figured out that the liabilities are the opposites of the assets. And you guys know that each one of us has got, as you go down the list and you see these on the right and the left, you either have the liability or the asset. You either have the liability of resentment or you've got the asset of forgiveness. You either have the liability of fear or you have the asset of faith. And so the question is, well, which ones do I have? Well, the numbers that you wrote down reveal to you which you have. Whatever the highest numbers you wrote down, that represents your liabilities. And whatever the lowest numbers you wrote down, that represents your assets. So as you go down the list, I want you to circle a word either on the left or the right as you go down. Whatever your high numbers are, circle the word as a liability. Whatever your low numbers are, circle the word over on the other side as an asset. Don't think, just circle. Thinking is bad. Circling is good. So go down the list and you circle a word on the left or the right all the way down, and that will reveal what are the liabilities and what are the assets. It may not necessarily be an even number of even others. It doesn't matter. Just go down the list. Well, that's a good question. What's low and what's high? Well, after you've done your inventory, let's say you've got 50, 50, 50, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30. The 30s are low. Yay! The 50s are high. Ooh. Right? So it depends on what's low for you. You see? Yes. Yeah. What if one is right in the middle? You get to pick. Is it something you want to be rid of? Circle it as a liability. How about that one? Yes.
I'm sorry.
Well, you got numbers. You added up the numbers of dots, wrote the numbers right here. So you're just going down the list, and you're just trying to see, like, based on what the number is, which one is it? So you just go, yeah. So here you start. This one is great. So you start here. So
that
the highest
would
number,
be high.
Yeah,
that
that's
would clearly be low.
Yeah, and that would be low. So that would be low for you. That one would be low for you.
Okay.
These are kind of stuck in the middle, so
right.
You get to pick.
I got you.
It's one more recovery miracle. Okay, so has everybody got eight words circled?
Question.
How is trust the opposite of jealousy?
Well, I mean, you know, these we're painting with a pretty wide brush here, as you can tell. So, I mean, if I am jealous, then I'm not trusting at all. Exactly. If I'm jealous of some, I'm not trusting at all. If I've got jealousy of something, I'm not trusting that I'm the same. I'm not trusting that it's different. Does this make sense?
You have like fear on one side, trust on the other. So it's kind of strange to have fear as a liability, but then trust as an asset at the same time.
Well, if I was, so how can you have fear and trust as opposites of one another? And actually what it is, it's fear as the opposite of faith and love, not trust. You see? So if I'm afraid of something, then I don't have faith that it's going to work out and be okay. I'm lacking a faith. If I've got the faith that something was going to work out, then I'm fearless. I got no fear energy about it. So those are kind of opposites of each other. Does that make sense? Yeah. The other one doesn't. Well, I would offer, let's not get too caught up in the details. Circle numbers. So has everybody got eight words circled? Okay. So do you see, does anybody have a diametrically opposed to what you see as your assets and liabilities? Anything jump out at you is like, this can't be right. Anything? So you do have something? Do you want to share it with us? Okay. Why is that?
I don't know. I just always thought, well, I don't trust anything. You know, I mean, I went through and did this. The jealousy part really.
Well, there you go. So what you thought was a liability, or what you maybe thought didn't realize was an asset that you had. This is a big day. This is good. Yeah. Yes. Circling. I tell you what. If you had a hard time circling humility, that sounds like somebody that's got some. I'm just saying. I don't know. Okay, so here's what I want you to know. So the purpose of the inventory is to come out with causes and conditions, right? We got to know what the cause is. What's my good? What's my bad? Right? And so you guys have done that. So here's what I want you to know. I want you to say, do something with me. Let's say, what if by some magic wand that I could take those character defects you circled for you And as of today, moving forward, I could slowly start to let those dissolve and become manageable. What if, at the same time, that those assets for you would slowly start to blossom? What would your life look like? Somebody give me a word. Serene, sane, peaceful, free, productive. Say? Joyous. Present. Manageable. I love that. Beautiful. Intimate. Close. Integrity. Humble. You know what? You guys just discovered something that I've known people that have been in recovery for decades don't know. You guys just discovered a secret. You guys just discovered how recovery works. Recovery does not work by asking us to stop doing something that we've been enjoying doing. If it did, all we'd wind up would be angry, creepy, and old. This is not recovery. Recovery works by changing your character. Recovery works by changing your character such that, let's just say, listen, hear me out. Let's just say, what if your life could be, and these are your words, not mine. What if your life could become serene, sane, peaceful, free, productive, joyous, present, manageable, beautiful, intimate, close, have integrity, and you could be humble? Would you have the need to go back to the old way of doing things?
No.
What?
No.
No, because it wouldn't serve a purpose. This is what we've been after the whole time. We've been trying to wrestle these things out of life under our own steam, and it doesn't work. Right? I mean, we had the right idea. I had the right idea. Who knew that porn, vodka, and meth was not a loving higher power? Seemed like it at the time. I chose the wrong higher power, right? Choosing the right higher power and following the steps on through to the end, your character will change. In the sixth step, we're not there yet, but in the sixth step, we're gonna be in the seventh step, humbly asking to have what? Our character defects, what? Removed. Well, before, you didn't even know what they were. You guessed. You thought you knew. Now you know exactly. And you're not surrendering in the seventh step just the defects. You're surrendering everything, good and bad, right? That's the assets and the liabilities. And if we take that to heart, I promise it works. Your character changes. And the old addictive practices no longer serve a purpose, because all the things you've wanted in life, all the peace, all the happiness, all those words you came up with come true for you. I absolutely promise, and that's the way the recovery works. Ta-da. All right. Now, I got good news and bad news. What do you want? Bad news? You want the bad news? You can do 100 inventories and never get one bit better. Never get one bit better. Self-knowledge avails you.
Nothing.
Oh, good. Yeah, no, nothing. No, bad. No. Yeah. So, what are we going to do about it? I think we better take the fifth step. Right? Turn in your book to page 72, the very first line. Page 72. Everybody say the first sentence together on page 72. What's it say? That's a great question. You done an inventory, now what? Well, I want you to jump down three lines and where it says we have admitted. Tal, what does it say?
We have admitted certain defects. We have ascertained in a rough way what the trouble is. We have put our finger on the weak items in our personal inventory. Now these are about to be cast out.
Okay, pause right there. That little innocuous line stuck in the middle of a paragraph. Those things that you circled, those things that have been kicking you around, those things that have been causing you trouble, those things that have been ruining your life, oh, they're going to be gone. They're going to be cast out. It says it in black and white. I'm not giving you theories. I'm telling you exactly what's going to happen. You're going to follow this thing all the way through. Oh, they're going to become manageable. They don't disappear completely, but they're going to become manageable. This is the path we're on. You want to go all the way to the end?
Yes.
Hello?
Yes.
Tal, what do we do?
This requires action on our part, which, when completed, will mean that we have admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our defects. This brings us to the fifth step.
All right, I want you to jump down about six lines and see where it says, in actual practice, we usually find. You see that? All right, start right there.
In actual practice, we usually find a solitary self-appraisal insufficient.
That's hysterical. That is hysterical. That's the way I used to assess my character. Solitary self-appraisal. Oh my gosh, anytime I do a solitary self-appraisal, I come out fantastic. Oh man, I'm great. Solitary self, if I'm going to involve you in it, oh, I'm the best. And anyway, it was their fault anyway. Keep going, Mr. Tao.
Many of us thought it necessary to go much further. We will be more reconciled to discussing ourselves with another person when we see good reasons why we should do so. The best reason first. If we skip this vital step, we may not overcome drinking or acting out. Time after time, newcomers have tried to keep to themselves certain facts about their lives. Trying to avoid this humbling experience, they have turned to easier methods. Almost invariably, they got drunk or went back to their addictive behavior. Having persevered with the rest of the program, they wondered why they fell. We think the reason is that they never completed their house cleaning. They took inventory all right, but hung on to some of the worst items in stock. They only thought they had lost their egoism and fear. They only thought they had humbled themselves. But they had not learned enough of humility, fearlessness, and honesty, in the sense we find it necessary, until they told someone else all their life story.
Yeah, I want you to jump over to page 74 and find the last paragraph. This is where it starts, notwithstanding. It talks about how, you know, that we pick out the person or person. It can be a sponsor. It could be a priest. It could be a professional. It could be somebody. But we got to tell somebody else all our life story. Then on page 74, find the very last paragraph. It gives us one caveat.
We must be entirely honest with somebody if we expect to live long or happily in this world.
All right, pause right there and jump to the next paragraph. It's bottom of page 74, notwithstanding the great necessity.
Notwithstanding the great necessity for discussing ourselves with someone, it may be one is so situated that there is no suitable person available. If that is so, this step may be postponed only, however, if we hold ourselves in complete readiness to go through with it at the first opportunity.
Yeah, and so it's important that we talk to the right person. Over on page 75, it says that, I mean, in the first full paragraph, that first line, when we decide who is to hear our story, what do? We get to it. We do not delay. One of the worst things I've ever seen in recovery is an unresolved fourth step. Yes, sir? Well, on the top of 75... 74. It was actually the bottom paragraph, notwithstanding.
We must be entirely honest.
Yeah, you must be entirely honest with somebody. Carry that all the way down to the end of the paragraph. Yeah, it also says in that middle paragraph, if you would rather not do this, like this is about choosing the sponsor, we searched our acquaintance for a closed-mouth understanding friend. And that is in a reference to sponsorship or somebody that we trust in the 12-step fellowship. So on page 75 of the second full paragraph, it's going to describe the fifth step. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Depends on if you need clarification to really come to a clean understanding of what the person is talking about. You know, I'd say sometimes, you know, generally speaking, I let somebody get everything out they need to say. But if I have some, if I just need a point clarified to make certain that I just have a clear understanding, I may ask a question. But by and large, I let the person, you know, go. There's no... You know, honestly, most of us are repeating the processes that went through with us. We're going through something similar to the experience each of us had when we delivered our fourth step. So I'd say only as a matter just for clarification if you need some help in understanding. Other than that, I just let the person go. Yeah. So in the second full paragraph of 75, this is going to be, number one, it's going to very briefly describe the fifth step process. And then, if you'd like to make notes out of the side, this is called the fifth step promises. These are going to be the promises that are going to come true if you're willing to go through with doing a fifth step.
We pocket our pride and go to it, illuminating every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past. Once we have taken this step, withholding nothing, we are delighted. We can look the world in the eye. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. Our fears fall from us. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience.
Okay, pause right there. That's the first place in the big book that the spiritual experience is first mentioned to begin. Not until after you've done your fifth step. You can do 1, 2, 3 all you want. You can write 1,000 inventories and never get one bit better. It's not until after you finish your fifth step, tell your stories, that the spiritual experience begins, according to what we just read. That's why this is so important.
The feeling that the drink problem or behavior problem has disappeared will often come strongly. We feel we are on the broad highway, walking hand in hand with the spirit of the universe.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, you know, and we're going to get a chance to practice that right now. We're going to get a chance to break up and take our inventories with us, go over to lunch. We've got our sharing partners in place. I want you guys to share your stories, share your inventories with your sharing partner, and then have your partner listen to you share their inventories. Now, before we go, can I tell you one more thing before we break? This may be the most important thing I've got to tell you. It may be the only important thing I've got to tell you today. And it's in the form of a story. So when I'd spent about an hour and a half with my sponsor and did the first three steps, and then he told me, now you're going to do an inventory. And so he kept asking me every day, how's it coming? And I kept telling him, it's going okay. And then after about 3 days, I made the mistake and told him the truth. Hate it when that happens. I told him, well, I'd been thinking about it a lot. And he said, okay, well, let me get it clear for you. Thinking is bad. Writing is good. So you better stop thinking about it and start writing, because you're going to be delivering your inventory to me Saturday. Whoa. So I got a spiral notebook and I started writing. I had never seen this kind of an inventory before, so I was doing it in columns like many of us have done. Resentments, fears, harms, explanation, how it affected me, all that good stuff. And so when I went down, we met at the same coffee shop on a Saturday, and I brought my inventory, and it took about 2 to 2.5 hours to tell all my stories. At the end of that, he asked me this. He said, did you leave anything out? And I told him that I was aware of. He said, well, that's fine. If something comes to you later, you just let me know and we'll go over that. But he said, I think you did good. And now he told me that I need to tell you something that my sponsor told me and his sponsor told him, something that's been passed down through generations of sponsorship that can be traced all the way back to New York. And it's something that I came here today to tell you. He said to me, as I say to you, that you are good men and women that either have a bad disease or you have been loving somebody or living with somebody that has a bad disease, and it's caused you to do some things you would have never done if you hadn't had it or lived with it. And because of that, you are forgiven. Because you're good men and women that have been in tough spots with a bad disease caused you to do some things you would have never done if it hadn't have been so. And because of that, you are forgiven. And here's the way the forgiveness piece works. Your peers here forgive you. Do you guys forgive each other?
Yes.
The people in the rooms of recovery all over the country hadn't even met you. They forgive you. I forgive you. And God forgives you. Because you're good men and women with a bad disease caused you to do some things you would have never done. Now, I can't tell you what happened next except to say that as I left that room, that place that day, that it was as if the door had opened just a crack and a little sliver of light came through because there was this one little piece of me that believed him. And I remember thinking to myself that if I'm going to accept this forgiveness for me, maybe I could let just a little bit of it leak out of me and leak onto my dad. So fast forward from them a few years later, and I wind up going to a spiritual retreat with a bunch of normies. I love me some normies, too. And so they break us up into small groups, and we go into these small groups, and we're going to share about spiritual experiences. And obviously, I'm sharing about the inventory, restitution, forgiveness piece we do in the 12-step world, right? And after I shared about this, a woman in my small group looks at me, and she says, oh, I see, you go around giving absolution. I went, crap. I think I'm supposed to have a license. Or a piece of special shirt. Or a car tag. Or a special parking place. Or something to do that. And I was like, oh, man, I left there and I went and I found this guy that I had fallen in love with at the conference, Father Ed. This was just the most delightful, easy to approach guy, Father Ed Lundeen. And I ran him down and I said, Father Ed, I've got a really important question to ask you. I said, I'm a 12-step guy. I'm an addict of all types. I got sober in the rooms of recovery with the 12 steps. I did an inventory. All the stuff I had done, shared it with a guy, wasn't a priest, told me I was forgiven. Now I go around sponsoring people, doing workshops, telling them they're forgiven. Am I doing anything wrong? Father Ed, I remember it like it happened this morning. He bent down and he looked at me and he said, you keep doing whatever it is you've been doing. So I don't know about nobody else, but I do know this. All of you are forgiven because Father Ed said so. I love you guys. I appreciate all your hard work and all your great questions. Are you doing okay? Yeah. All right. Take your inventories. Go to lunch, wherever it is, and share your inventories. And I'll meet you back here, but I don't know when.